the studios of WBAA Public Radio in West Lafayette, this is Indiana Public Broadcasting's monthly conversation with Purdue University President Mitch Daniels. I'm Stan Jastrzebski, and we appreciate you joining us for the program this month. If ever you have a question you would like to make sure gets on the program, email that to news@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. You've come in with a prop today. This is kind of new for you. What do you got there?
How good of you to notice. Yes, it's my degree in three hat that someone over at the College of Liberal Arts had prepared to help alert people to their new, I think, terrific initiative to make possible almost all liberal arts degrees at Purdue in 3 years for those young people so inclined. And I think it's a terrific new option. It's a great way to differentiate our College of Liberal Arts, who have to compete, unlike pharmacy or engineering or agriculture or other colleges. They have to compete with literally everybody, public, private, large, small. And so they've shown some real leadership and imagination here. And it's not just wearing their hat around. I agreed to be out on the radio promoting this this new alternative. As we say, it won't be for everybody, but if a young person wants to get her or his career started a year ahead of time wants to show the world of employers and others what a go-getter they are, and by the way, if they want to save thousands of dollars along the way, maybe it's for them. And so we're very, very hopeful that significant number of our students starting even this year will take us up.
Do you feel that Purdue is losing out on liberal arts majors to that large pool of competitors that you talked about? Do you feel that you need to compete better against, let's take the private liberal arts colleges, the DePauws, the Butlers, the Hanovers of the world, who have good liberal arts programs, who are expensive on paper? Do you feel that, but a very different atmosphere on those campuses? Do you feel that you're having to find a new way to compete with those universities?
Our college has slipped in enrollment over recent years, and I think deserves to have a much higher enrollment than it does. We have some tremendous people, world renowned people in some of the disciplines. But I think, in all honesty, because first of all, they do have to compete with the whole world. Secondly, from time to time, I think that the prestige and the success of our College of Engineering, computer science, the things that are larger and sometimes get more attention here, has held them back. And so here's some innovation from that college that I think gives them a chance to, let's say, capture market share that they really do deserve given the quality of people who teach there.
You mentioned doing radio advertisements. I noticed another place you were on the radio in the last month was on the Bob and Tom show talking about beer that is being brewed for Purdue.
Well, you're correct. You know, we have debuted Boiler Gold. It's really a way to highlight some of the great work being done in our College of Agriculture to help the hops business, much as Purdue researchers help the wine growers of Indiana become a very big and widespread phenomenon. There's a good chance of helping the burgeoning microbrewery industry. And so devising new and better ways to grow hops in this climate where they haven't historically.
No, our business reporter, our Indiana Public Broadcasting business reporter, Annie Ropeek, has done reporting on both wine and hops. And it turns out that hops don't grow very well in Indiana as currently cultivated.
That's right. And nationally, the really explosion of interest in microbreweries has put some pressure, I guess, on the hops production. So our folks have been working with the growers on that and are about to offer a minor in fermentation science, which is we hope will interest a number of students. So it seemed a natural extension. We're not the first university to.
Can it be long before someone says they're officially minoring in beer?
It may well be the case.
But I don't know about you, but I went to school with a lot of people who seemed to major in beer. Yeah. So
I heard a rumor or two. Yeah. Well, no, I think it's a fun initiative, but I do like people to know that it starts with Purdue's mission of engagement and helping as we always have growers and with the science and the. That might make them more efficient and open new markets to them. But no, it's the huge uptake. They can't make enough of it. As soon as the word got out, they were buried in phone calls. And now I'm told that retailers are calling in. People are walking in asking for it. How soon can I get some?
I noticed you brought beer to Bob and Tom, but not to me.
Well, play your cards right, Stan, and there could be some in your future. I should have thought of that.
This is Indiana Public Broadcasting's monthly conversation with Purdue President Mitch Daniels. As always, email questions to news@wbaa.org or tweet them at @WBAAnews on Twitter. We talked last month on the show about your letter to campus at the beginning of the year, talking about how Purdue has reacted to the events of Charlottesville. And then this week has come some postings from another white supremacist group. This is similar to what happened last November, and you at that time put out a statement, and you did again this time, saying you didn't want to give those groups any more publicity than they'd already had. So I wanted to ask you a general question this time around. Why do you think, even after you've issued statements like that, condemning racism and bigotry as not being in line with anything that Purdue stands for, do you think it keeps happening on the campus? Is there a message that's not getting to these folks? What's your sense of why that keeps going on?
We weren't singled out. The claim is that multiple campuses around the country got these leaflets. Maybe because people cover it, I don't know. This is the attention's what they want, and if it works for them, I guess they might try again. It's an awful easy way to get publicity: stick a piece of paper on a wall, and especially if people overreact to it.
So I was thinking about one of the major things that your time in office has come to be known for is really trying to raise the profile of the university. And I think no matter what people think, they'd have to agree that has been the case. Does something like this come with that territory as kind of an unintended consequence, that as you become more out there, more visible, that there are more people who say, hey, I see that Purdue is visible, and thus I can make my thing visible by happenstance as well?
It may very well be the case. And maybe it is, so to say, a cost of doing business if you try to become a better known and occasionally innovative university. You're just on somebody's radar for that you'd rather not be, but if so, so be it. We will continue doing, obviously, those things we think make us a stronger and better and more appealing university, and hope that there are not too many side effects along the way.
One of the things I noticed, and not to belabor this will be the last question about this, but the group says it wants classes taught about its beliefs, and so this is something of a test of your commitment to free speech. Do you think that Purdue could, should, would teach classes attempting to explain white supremacy?
No. I mean, we don't tell our faculty what to teach. I think I'm pretty safe in saying there's none of our faculty here planning to teach that. We don't tell them what to teach or not teach. I think I can be pretty confident in saying don't expect that to happen.
So while we're on the subject of free speech, there was a long article that was published in the Chronicle of Higher Education about Purdue and its free speech policies, talking a lot about the things you've tried to do over the last couple of years. I wanted to get your reaction to it now that you've had a chance to read it.
Mixed. For Purdue to be the lead article in the leading journal that covers higher education is a nice thing to see. I will say that this is not publicity we went looking for. I politely declined to talk to the reporter, left that to others, left our record to speak for itself.
Well, yeah, let me ask you about that, because the article does point out, it says you declined multiple requests for comment. That's how the article puts it. Obviously, you're a public face of the university and do shows like this and lots of other things. Why decline this particular opportunity?
First of all, I'm all over the record, and there's any number of I would have been saying the same thing in probably about the same words if I had. But secondly, a lot of people have participated in this, and I wanted the spotlight on them. This was everything we've done in this area by now has involved all kinds of people, faculty, student groups, and I was happy to see that part highlighted. For instance, the orientation program on free speech, which our people conceived, put together. It's been sought after by people from various other schools. Other schools want to emulate it in some fashion. Our folks have had to go give presentations at conferences and welcome guests who wanted to come in and look at it. They deserve to get the credit for this. We had, as you'll recall, very helpful input from both the undergraduate and graduate student governments, urging us on to extend our protection of these freedoms. And that's where the focus – if there had to be an article, that's where the focus ought to be. You know, back to the point you made earlier, this could be another area where attention brings unwelcome follow-on.
How so?
Attention. Well, that because we have taken a little more active approach to this subject, it might invite people, and I hope I'm not doing it just by talking with you now, to come try us on. It's the right thing to do. I know from enormous feedback from alums, students, faculty, and the outside world it's seen as an appropriate set of actions that many hope will become more widespread in higher ed.
With respect to trying Purdue on, as you say, one of the things that the article notes is that in the wake of Charlottesville, Richard Spencer, who's a white supremacist leader, put out a bunch of requests to speak on college campuses all over the place, and there were mixed reactions to that. Some colleges said let it happen, some made special accommodations, some initially said no and then relented. Your university legal counsel, Steve Schultz, was quoted in the article as saying he was not aware of such a request being made of Purdue. But what about that as a consequence of looking at the free speech policies and this person specifically being mentioned in the article? Have you thought about what your official response would be?
Thought about it.
And what have you come to?
Well, it's a hypothetical situation at this point, and that I hope stays that way.
So the article also points out that some of the speakers who have been uninvited to other campuses have incited violence with their words in some cases. And you have clearly said on multiple occasions that that's where you draw the line, not with words, but with actions, especially ones that would have a specific criminal penalty attached to them. Mm-hmm. And so I wondered, you know, would you ever consider, for instance, asking to review someone's speech before they gave it to make sure that it doesn't ever cross such a line?
No, the line is violence. I don't care who perpetrates it. It ought to be met with a very firm response and sanctions. And words are one thing. Deeds are another. It's a pretty simple, clean dichotomy to observe. And happily, we've had some of the former, none of the latter, and let's hope it stays that way.
Well, I mean, the point the article makes is that in some cases the speeches veer off into places where they say, and here are things you could do to go with what cause X or cause Y. And it seems to me that the way a university could, you know, sort of make itself a little bit safer is to look at whether that line is even approached in a speech before.
Well, it hasn't happened here, happily, so Let's hope it doesn't.
So the last thing I want to ask about is in terms of this is, as you're going forward, are you trying to assess what the nationwide mood is versus what the mood is on the West Lafayette campus? Do you see them as different entities with different tenets to them in terms of how people might react to speech that could be near one of these lines?
obviously watch the situation. I'll just say that in the vast, vast majority, our students and our faculty are concentrated here on the real work of education at Purdue, teaching, research, and engagement. And while we are we will maintain a free and open environment for speech of all kinds, and there are some people for whom these issues you keep asking me about are front and center. It is simply not the preoccupation of 99% of folks here, and we respect those for whom it's front and center, and we protect people's rights to speak up, and always will. But if you're asking, do I think that has been less of a issue here and will be, I think so far yes, and in the future probably yes again.
This is Indiana Public Broadcasting's monthly conversation with Purdue President Mitch Daniels. We've got about 10 minutes left on this program. Email any questions at any time to news@wbaa.org. Tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. One of the bigger topics on university campuses the last month or so has been the response to the so-called DREAMers, those students who are under the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals or DACA program. You and about 600 other university presidents across the country have signaled your desire to let those students keep learning. And President Trump has given Congress a deadline to try to come up with some sort of solution to what will happen to these people so they're not in any sort of limbo. What do you hope Congress does? What would benefit Purdue if Congress did it?
Ratify the DACA program on the basis that a deal's a deal and people have relied on it. And it would be very unfair to have anyone exposed to some negative consequence because they did. Congress should have dealt with this to start with. Courts have ruled that it's the DACA predecessor, but it's exactly the same logic would apply, is illegal, that the president did not have the authority to do what he did. We don't, and that's an important principle. We have a different president now. You don't want our presidents out making laws by themselves in violation of the Constitution. The best thing for the DACA beneficiaries, and by far the best thing in terms of preserving the rule of law in the country, is for Congress to do its job, which I think there are signs that they're going to do, as they should have in the beginning. If they had passed a law about this then, we wouldn't have the uncertainty and the risks that we do today. So I do hope that happens, and I'm rooting for those who, on both sides, by the way, who are talking as though they'll make it happen.
We have talked on this program about you wanting to extend Purdue's education to more students from Latin American countries. Obviously, that is a large portion of where DACA students come from, are Latin American countries. How does your desire to see it ratified jibe with your wish to get more of that sort of diverse student population?
It was not the first motive I had, simple fairness and the protection of any DACA students who we do have. We don't go around asking, but odds are we have some, would be first in mind. Coincidentally, you'd ask me, I had a meeting yesterday with the president of our Brazilian students organization. We have about 100 now, which is a nice increase over where we've been. And he and I were discussing this subject. How can we recruit more students from his country, other South American countries? And I think that our prospects are very good, quite apart from the DACA controversy, because Purdue's reputation is very strong and positive. We've discussed it here before. Sometimes you have to get away from West Lafayette, as work causes me to do frequently. The further out you get, sometimes the stronger the reputation is, and that's what he reported.
On to other things, there was a big announcement on campus earlier this month. Purdue is going to get about a $20 million grant from the National Science Foundation to create a research center that's going to help study shale gas. Was it important to you that Purdue was the lead agency on this? You're working with UT Austin and Northwestern and New Mexico and Notre Dame, but did you really want to be the lead on it?
You bet. It's been a long time since the NSF, been over 30 years since the NSF conferred an energy research, I'm sorry, engineering research center on Purdue. It's a big deal. There are very, very few of these, and it's a terrific accomplishment by the faculty involved that we were selected. I mean, just think back over that list of universities you just named, some very prestigious schools in the supporting cast with Purdue in the lead. So yes, it's another great recognition of the brilliance and the talent that abides on this campus, and we're really proud of Dr. Ribeiro and the ChemE department, Engineering College generally, for being selected.
I was looking through all the press materials, and they put out a nice video about it as well, and I was interested to note that the video didn't mention hydraulic fracturing or fracking, which of course has become this kind of charged topic. And that's how the shale gas is going to be mined. I talked to Dr. Ribeiro afterwards. Why do you think that was? Why avoid those terms?
Well, until you ask, I hadn't really thought about it. The little video is really for the most lay of audiences. I think you'd agree. It's almost a cartoon, pretty cute, really.
Very short.
I'm not sure that anybody consciously decided to avoid the term, I will say that we'd have been really proud to have a so-called ERC placed on this campus, regardless of the subject matter. That the subject matter of this one is so central to the future success of America, it's been the most transformative technological breakthrough of recent years. It's the kind of thing that's going to keep energy costs low. It's creating already tens of thousands of those middle-class jobs that we are all looking for in this economy, and has the very real prospect of making us an energy exporter. It's reducing CO2 like nothing else that's been done by replacing coal in electricity production. So it's a really important, maybe the central economic and technological phenomenon we could be participating in. And so as I say, it wouldn't have mattered. I'd have felt great about an ERC on this campus, but to be leading in this area, a double win.
So I talked to a couple of environmental scientists about it, and one of the interesting things they said to me was, so this is being talked about as a so-called bridge fuel. In other words, what do we do for the next, and Dr. Ribeiro says, 50 years or thereabouts until renewable sources like wind and solar get to be the primary drivers. Mm-hmm. And some people I talked to said we're a little worried that if you're building out the fossil fuel infrastructure and shale gas is qualified as a fossil fuel, just like coal is, then isn't it going to be a little bit harder in 50 years to actually make that transition if we're spending all this time and money and energy on that part of the infrastructure rather than spending it now on trying to see how good we can make the renewables as fast as possible?
I think they need to go look at the arithmetic. We're all looking forward to the day when alternative fuels really can shoulder the load. But the mathematics is just irrefutable. It's going to be a good while. And let's hope for miracles. And I think the best thing we can do, others have said, let's add money to research on renewable breakthroughs. But let's not delude ourselves. The demand for electricity is going to go way up. And the internet and computer age is requiring more and more and more all the time. We're never going to and shouldn't lower the living standards of Americans because we decline to use the energy, the affordable, reliable energy sources we have. As I mentioned already, natural gas extraction revolution has already had a more positive effect on lowering CO2 than anything else that's been done or tried. So I think the right answer is to pour as much as we can into advancing the day when wind and solar and so forth really are, without enormous subsidies, able to contribute affordable, reliable energy of the kind that a modern society increasingly demands. But it would be really, really poor judgment to try to stunt this set of breakthroughs, which our ERC now hopes to enhance, because somehow you think it'll get in the way of that eventual progress.
I wanted to ask you about something you said during your brief talk there, and it was interesting, the crowd's reaction to it. You said, you know, the last time this happened, they referred to you as President Daniels when you walked up. You said the last time this happened, it was President Reagan, a real president, who was here to announce this. And you said, we don't have one of those today. And the crowd had this moment of just stunned silence. And then there was like oohing and aahing, and there was some cheering and there was some clapping. And you said, we don't have one of those here today, is what I meant to say. And everybody's kind of turning to what did he really? Did he really just say that about President Trump? I've known you for a while. You don't misspeak all that often.
You know what I meant. I did say today. I was making fun of myself, which is a healthy thing for one to do once in a while.
But not how it came off.
Well, just just syntactically, there was a better way. I had no such intention. I think you knew it, and I think most people there did. But it got a laugh. But no, I meant the last time this happened at Purdue, a President of the United States came, and all you get today is me. But I appreciate you saying we know each other well enough. You know, I wasn't making some wisecrack I avoid about national politics. I avoid those when you ask me to answer them or anybody else.
One last thing about presidents, past, present, and future. I thought it was interesting that, you know, the current NSF president is Franz Cordova, who is your immediate predecessor in your current job. Did you have any sense of why she wasn't there? There were a number of people who were talking about, well, goodness gracious, couldn't she have come back to Purdue to be part of this announcement, the university she once led? Did you have any sense of whether there was any discussion about that?
I don't know. I didn't hear it come up. I guess it is an interesting question. But listen, she's very, very busy, and she might have felt. I'm pretty sure that she observes whatever protocols they have there for either recusal or steering clear of decisions that might affect any of the institutions she's worked at before. So it might have been it might have been, I'm just guessing here, that whatever schedule conflict she might have had, a second factor might have been not looking in any way as though a favorite had been played.
All right. Well, that's all the time we've got. Thanks, as always, for your time, and we'll talk again in October.
See you then.
All right. This has been Indiana Public Broadcasting's monthly conversation with Purdue University President Mitch Daniels. Remember, you can send a question at any time for this program to news@wbaa.org. You can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter, and all these shows are archived at wbaa.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Major support for the monthly conversation with Mitch Daniels comes from Gaylor Electric. Gaylor provides electrical services from pre-construction design through project completion and a 24/7 service department. Information at gaylor.com.